today, which is the PIR on IFRS 10 to 12, and I hand over to Jen.
Thank you, Andreas. First, my apology for impeding the purity of this in-person board meeting. Hopefully, you can hear me. At its meeting last month, the board concluded that IFRS 10, 11, and 12 are working as intended and decided on five topics that the board would consider when developing its work plan for 2022 to 2026 as part of the third agenda presentation. Agenda paper 7, which is the second of the two papers considering the board's responses to the feedback on the request for information, brings two further topics for the board's discussion. The staff would like to remind the board that the staff assessment on priority is within the context of the post-implementation review only, and the board will consider further action on these topics in its discussion on the third agenda presentation. The first topic the staff recommend, assisting the application of IFRS 10 and IFRS 11, responds to stakeholders' call for additional guidance on the application of a few particular areas of IFRS 10 and 11. The staff are recommending the board include in this possible project four subtopics. The staff believe the board would be able to undertake narrow scope of a standard setting to assist the application of the requirements. The four subtopics include, first, the relationship between the substantive rights and protected rights. Second, change in relevant activities during the life cycle of an investee. And the third one, assessing non-contractual agency relationships. And the last one, accounting for disproportionate share of output compared to share of ownership of a joint operation. Paragraphs 43 to 49 of the paper identify other subtopics stakeholders call for additional guidance. However, the staff are not recommending these subtopics be included in the possible project. The staff think many of these subtopics relate to the requirements in IFRS 10 and 11 that requires exercise of judgment. That judgment is often a function of the complexity of the transactions or facts and circumstances. The reasons we are not recommending these subtopics include the frequency of the relevant issues, the consideration of cost and benefits of a standard setting and the implementation of potential amendments, and the concern on unintended consequences of additional examples. Now, I will hand over to the board for discussion on the possible project on assisting the application of IFRS 10 and IFRS 11, which the staff assess as a medium priority.
Thank you, Jen. I open it up for any comments that board members may have. So that's question one only. Mary, please.
Then paragraph 41 goes back to the question of what factors the joint operator considers in determining the accounting when it takes a share of output that's different from its share of ownership interest. And as you reminded us in the paper, the Interpretation Committee agenda decisions had first identified the reasons why the share of output differs. And so I had some significant reservations about whether we could do especially a narrow scope project looking at this, because to me it seems that I'd expect that the reasons people take a different proportion than their ownership are going to vary entity to entity, and therefore I'd assign a low probability to us being able to develop guidance that would do more than answer people's fact patterns one at a time. And so even if you're proposing only research to see whether we could identify common factors, I admit it's a gut reaction rather than having gone out and pulled lots of financial statements. I think I would remove this from the list of ones to which a medium priority is attached, because I doubt our ability to develop guidance that is general enough, and so I wouldn't even start the research of trying to identify whether there are common factors.
Good. Just ask probably the staff in that regard. So the issue that I am aware of, probably with my previous career, was that this issue has always come up in particular jurisdictions, where the state or the government stepped in as a shareholder, but wasn't really interested in getting the returns. It was really being part of infrastructure development or things like that. So if that's a prevalent case that we are seeing, that might be arising in other jurisdictions as well, where really you set up a structure where the public becomes a partner in the structure, but is not really interested in the output or in the benefits, but is really just there to actually kickstart a certain development.
Although the issue that came to the Interpretation Committee was commercial partners, where you might have had, let's say, a 60-40 ownership split, and for some reason in that period you were committed to purchasing 60%, but you only purchased 50%. So
yeah,
it was much more in that context that we had the question.
Yeah, I get that. Okay, Bertrand.
First, and to echo Mary, I totally agree with her comment on this issue. So I won't, and for the same reason she expressed, so I won't repeat myself on this. I was more curious to also to understand the three other subjects who raised the issues. Do you have a sense of, in the feedback we received, what types of entities provided the feedback? Is it preparers, users, enforcers, auditors? You know, or
I would say we cannot identify a clear trend or concentration of certain type of stakeholders that who are raising these three subtopics.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. For me, it appears to be very practical issues. I mean, honestly, notably the first one, the relationship between substantive rights and protective rights, from my prior experience, it's always something you come across, always. And honestly, the standard provides quite clear guidance to deal, at least in my prior experience, to deal with the practical issues and concerns. So that's why I'm asking the question, because I'm surprised that it emerges as a concern by some stakeholders. The first one, at least, for sure, this one is, I would say, I don't know exactly what to do in this regard, as I think everything is already clear in the standard. The second one, I can appreciate this one. is a bit more tricky. And the third one, I cannot, don't know that much about it. For me, if there was a subject on IFRS 11, it would be above all, because we had requests to incorporate into the standards some of the Interpretations Committee decisions that were made in 2015. I've always been surprised by the decision reached that unincorporated joint arrangements are mechanically a joint operation. I mean, for me, it's something that have always surprised me. It's almost as if the principle applied was form over substance. Because the legal form is unincorporated, then mechanically it's a joint operation, and we do not enter into any form of consideration that could be a JV. So I appreciate that for notably auditors and enforcers it may be very convenient, but we are not analyzing the legal substance of the respective rights and obligations. So it's more that if there was a subject on IFRS 11, it would be this one, even though I perfectly appreciate that we may not want to reopen the discussion around it. And so on the fourth one, hunting for this proportional share, I'm totally aligned with Mary.
Thanks. Some observations. I don't know how useful they're going to be, but just some thoughts. So back in the day, I was one of the lucky people who was a member of the staff working on IFRS 10. So I can remember some of the angst behind some of these areas when we did these, this from a standard perspective 100 years ago. And so my comments are sort of informed by that. So I think some of these are sort of quite different in terms of their, I don't know if the word is difficult. Some of them I think are more on the nature of clarifications, because I think at the time, certainly I felt like we had a pretty clear idea what we meant, but we seemed to have a challenge with communicating what those ideas are. I'd put substantive rights and protective rights in that category. I thought they were two quite distinct things, but people seem to muddle them up. And so clearly we need to either think about clarifying the wording in the standard or educational material or something. But I feel like we've got something pretty solid to start with there, or at least we did have when my head was in that space. So that feels like not too difficult a thing to do. If I compare that with relevant activities during the life cycle of an investee, I think that would require us to sort of reopen our heads a bit and think about what the concept of control is and what we're asking people to assess, and whether, you know, whether you're looking forward or whether it's an assessment just at the date with the conditions as at the date. I think that's a little bit harder, because I think it's more than just clarification. I think it makes us think about the concept of control a little bit more deeply. People clearly need help, so I think it's worth looking at, but it's just a different type of problem, I think, for us to help people with. And then the third one I'd comment on is this non-contractual agency relationship. So I've got a lot of grey hair from thinking about that when we were developing IFRS 10, because it's really, really hard. And for me, my concern with that one is it might be a little bit like the disproportionate share of output comments. I think people really want to be able to look and see their fact pattern and know what the answer is, and I'm not sure we're ever going to be able to do that, because it's just really judgmental and you have to think about 20 different things and just make a call. And I'm not sure how much we're going to be able to do to really help in that area. Now, I know people find it tricky, so maybe we should stop and look at it, but I'm a bit dubious about how much help we'd be able to provide on that one. So.
Okay.
Thank you, Andreas. Thank you, Jacin, for the paper. I would start saying that IFRS 10, 11, and 12 is working as intended. I'm happy with that. And then I was just looking at the topics here, and one that if I have to pick up, because some of the topics might be a bit more generic, and I was still trying to figure out whether some of these requests are very specific. Some I can see that might have some more pervasive, I would say, effect and benefit as well if we do something. But there is one specifically here that when I go back to the detailed paper, and I'm talking about the third one, assessing non-contractual agency relationships. It is in paragraph 55 to 60 in the paper 7A. And then it says that the response to questions were mixed. Those responded said applying paragraphs B73 and B75 of IFRS 10 enables an investor to assess whether control exists because another party is acting as a de facto agent, acknowledged that this is an area where significant judgment is required, and other respondents asked for additional guidance. Actually, most of the topics that we discussed ends with this sentence. Other respondents asked for additional guidance. But when I go back, when I move a bit, it say that many of the respondents who answered this question said they do not need to assess the de facto agency relationships frequently. And then when I put all together, I'm just wondering whether this is really something that it has some pervasive effect. It sounds too specific, honestly. I wouldn't classify this as a high priority. And in relation to IFRS 12, my general feeling about the feedback received is that it works as intended. I don't think that we can do much to improve it. It sounds that every time that we hear something about IFRS 12 is much more an implementation issue. I mean, that some are still adapting than actually something that is not well designed in this standard. Therefore, I mean, that I would, in general, support the staff recommendation, except for the third one, that's assessing non-contractual agents' relationship. I would put this in the together with the other topics that we shouldn't deal with. And I honestly wouldn't put the project on disclosure of interest in other entities even as a low priority. I would also put together with the other one. Thank you.
Bruce?
Thanks very much. So I'm going to start in the same place as today did. I mean, I think these standards are working, and I think that was the overall message we got. And I guess when I kind of went through the recommendations and that, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but what we're being asked to do is consider whether we would put these into our agenda. So we're not making a decision that we're going to take these on. These are things we're going to take through to our agenda consultation. And I guess when I read through it, I didn't see anything in my mind that jumped out at me and said, boy, we really need to do this. You know, and what leads me on to also say that is the IFRIC has dealt with a lot of issues on these standards. And I actually think the fact that the IFRIC's been able to issue agenda decisions shows to me the standards are working. Because, I mean, remember, an agenda decision is just pointing and saying, guys, the information's there. We've actually covered it. So I'm not unhappy that we've got – I actually think it's – that. Strange enough, I think the more agenda decisions we've actually been able to publish on standards shows to me the standards are actually quite robust. Because we're saying they work and we don't need to do standard setting. So that doesn't faze me. The other thing I was going to say as a general comment around these is I always get worried in PIRs and all my many years of having done PIRs, clearly. But I mean, you know, my concern always of doing this is you can't ask us for guidance around judgment. You know, at the end of the day, people need to make judgment calls. And I never have a problem when somebody says, oh, we had to apply judgment. That's what principle-based standards is. If you want rules-based, tell us, we'll change everything we do. But so I think the criteria I go through when I look at them are there. I agree with the comments interesting Mary made earlier. I think there's a challenge in terms of addressing that one. I'd go at that. Just one other comment I want to make on the feedback. On the subtopics not recommended for and their rationale, the only one I question, and I'm not saying I think we should address it, but it was more the rationale, was number 15. Where we said the liabilities arising from a contract signed by a joint operator on behalf of a joint operation. We said there the reasoning was kind of, it is difficult to do, it only impacts a number of people, but the IFRIC took a decision that this was broad enough to address it. So I just think we've got to be consistent. We can't say, well, we thought this was a big enough issue for the IFRIC to go and do a whole lot of work and issue a gender decision, but when we look at it here, we say, oh, it's actually not a big issue, it's not broad enough. I just think...
It's paragraph 48, 49 that...
Yeah.
I don't think we were saying it wasn't big enough, but I think our feeling was, at the time that we were having the discussions in the post-implementation review process, it was in a settling in phase, and we just felt... it would be better to wait until the PIR of IFRS 16 was there to consider this.
That was going to be my next comment. I mean, this isn't only an IFRS 16 issue. I agree it's prevalent in that. Yeah. I don't think we could address it anyhow in stand setting. So by no means am I saying we should elevate it. I'm just saying if we're doing a feedback, to me it would have been, we looked at the issue, we actually, as the agenda decision says, we feel the standards give you guidance on what you need to do, therefore we're not addressing it. I think my worry is that you're kind of passing it down the back line to the IFRS 16 PIR, and then we're going to have to address it again there. And I'm not convinced we'll get a... sitting around this table when we do the IFRS 16 PIR, I don't think we're going to get a different answer in that we don't actually think we need to address this. And then my fear would be somebody will criticise it and say, well, you're not addressing that here, but the only way we could address that is actually through IFRS 11. Well, hang on, guys, you've kind of put us in a rock and a hard place where we've missed the IFRS 11 PIR and you told us you're going to address in 16. Now you're not addressing 16 because it's actually not really a leasing issue. And I just think we could come under criticism that people say we haven't actually said why we didn't do this. So as I said, not in any way saying that needs to be elevated. I just think the reason we give for that, I think if that was going to be in a feedback, I'd take a different line of thinking. Thank you.
May I do a quick follow-up comment on what Bruce has just said? I had flagged this also as a comment, but I felt it was more appropriate for question two than question one. But just to mention that, effectively, to echo what Bruce said, actually the reason why we have covered in the agenda decision only the liability side of the balance sheet. We never covered the asset side of the balance sheet. And considering IFRS 16 requirements only, we could not address the asset side of the balance sheet. We could only address the liability side of the balance sheet. So clearly, the asset side of the balance sheet in this situation needs to be dealt with, probably considering IFRS 11, not IFRS 16 requirements. So similar to Bruce, I would not wait. This issue, probably, I would not wait for IFRS 16. The PIR on IFRS 16.
So I'm going to just do a narrow comment on 1B. I agree with the staff's recommendation on low priority for the disclosure of interest. But what was interesting to me was the commentary in paragraphs 38 through 40 of 7B, where, having participated in some of the outreach and hearing the user input on the disclosures, the feedback came in the form of, these are great disclosures, I wish we got these in all transactions. And they highlighted the ones that were really useful. And what comes through in the commentary is that we created a project for some of the things that would be new, but a lot of the things that were highlighted were actually requirements in IFRS 12. And we talked about this a little bit yesterday. Users tend not to know the exact disclosure requirements, so I think that's the place they came from. They more respond to what they usually see, and that's valuable information that users are telling us they don't see the disclosures that are required under our interpretation all the time. So I think, you know, I don't think this rises to the level of the project, but I think going back to the conversation yesterday, if we can feed back to some of our stakeholders that we're getting this input, that in implementation users are saying they're not seeing the disclosures that we think are required, I think that's a valuable part of the PIR process that we should be going back and doing, because it may be that we can highlight specific jurisdictions and have a talk with those regulators, or it may be widespread and we have to identify that fact as well.
Yeah,
yeah, just I also think it's a very good paper. I think as Tadio said, that IFRS 10, 11, and 12 works as the board intended. Just building on what Bruce said, I think a lot of issues actually it's about judgment. How can stakeholders make judgment to apply the principle included in the in those standards? I think the main objective of this paper, plus the paper in the October meeting, is try to build on what kind of feedback we are going to provide to the stakeholders after we conclude on the PIR of IFRS 10, 11, and 12. So I really like the scope the staff identified in paragraph 51, said that, we are going to give some feedback to the stakeholders after we receive all the feedback from stakeholders, And that scope would be will not discuss the principles, will not to change the principles in IFRS 10 and 11. And what we are going to do based on the feedback we receive from the stakeholders, because obviously there are some application issues there. We just keep silent. It's not a good solution, good feedback to the stakeholder, because all those stakeholders has been invested a lot of resources, time to provide feedback to us. So I think there are several, suggestions from staff. Maybe it could be a narrow scope amendment. Maybe we can provide additional application examples to illustrate those principles. And maybe we can provide education materials. But it's just some kind of suggestion and feedback we can provide to the stakeholders. But it's up to the board to make a decision in the future. So I really like the scope the staff identified in paragraph 51, because in the end we need to provide something, to respond to the feedback we received from stakeholders. but it's not mean, it does not necessarily mean we are going to change the principle, the principles in the IFRS 10 and 11. Thank you.
Yes, I agree with what Jinchou mentioned, but still clarifying some specific requirements for specific shareholders who have a question about that those requirements that can disrupt other stakeholders' established practices. So we should be very careful about how we can respond to those questions we received, because I understand that fourth question. I'm just wondering if we touch anything particular and clarify something or add some kind of the elements to support understanding of the application. It might affect the list of stakeholders' practice principally. In my point of view, probably the second one might be the possibility we can add some clarification, that because I think assessment of the relevant activities when the relevant activity changed during the life cycle of an investee, that is a kind of specific factors, and probably that can be dealt isolated from the other requirement applies. So even though I see some possibility that we can deal with this issue, but still we should apply caution.
Jen, do you want to respond, or do you want me to respond? Okay, so I think when we selected the four, we did take into consideration that a point that Rika makes about the disturbing practice, and that was one of the points we took into consideration. And I accept, even if you do point two on the relevant activities, you will be disturbing practice. I understand what Mary's saying on the joint operations, but I think what we were saying was the first thing we would do would be to identify whether we could look at fine factors before sort of jumping into a standard setting area. In terms of the non-contractual agency relationship, I think we felt this could be quite a narrow scope amendment that we could make that would help people because of the kind of difference between what's in the basis and what's in the standard. So we looked quite carefully at the areas when we were looking at the 15 subtopics. But I agree, it is very difficult. It was a big judgment call in from all the feedback we had, which is, you know, very much condensed in this paper, to look at the pervasiveness. And that's why we went back to the national standard setters and the large firms to get some further feedback. But it has been a very difficult judgment call.
So by listening to the feedback that board members have provided, would it be fair to say support for that is lukewarm? But for different reasons, right? So for some areas, we've heard there's little that we probably could provide, because in the end it is application of judgment, or it is a consideration of a myriad of factors, and it would be very difficult to say this is the decision tree that will get you an answer on your respective fact pattern. So I'm conscious. I'm also conscious of the comment that Jinjiao made, and that you were just alluding to, that these were issues that were reported to us, right? And it is always easy to be dismissive of that, as if, sorry, can't do anything, right? But we need to be careful as to how we message that and what reasoning we are giving. I think the pervasiveness question is obviously a fair one, but I trust that you have checked on that. But then the question is, do we believe that we can really do something meaningful that would add value in that respective regard? And that had led you to these 4 points. Now, out of the 4 points, and I could say and be at a fifth point here, really, I think by listening to board members' comments, the only one that probably got some traction is little 2i, right? So the change in relevant activities during the life cycle. On all of the other ones, there were either hesitations as to do we really think we could do something? And you just said, well, you believe that some limited targeted standard setting might help us here. If I balance that with the views that I've heard, it seemed a little bit that there's a question mark behind it. So I'm not in a position to be the chief arbitrator here, right? So it's obviously a judgment call. But I think what is important is we're not making a decision today as to do we embark on this. We are sort of taking a pre-decision of should these areas that have been identified by staff go into our general consideration as part of the agenda consultation when we come to setting out our project strategy. And even then, we still would have to do the relative ranking and decide, is this a big project, is it a small project, is it high, medium, low, and all the other considerations. So for that reason, I personally was probably more inclined to say, okay, give it a go, right? Because this was not the final decision yet. You could say, I'm cowardly ducking away because I'm just postponing the final decision, and I'm happy to just listening to the comments there. Yeah. But this is how I would treat it, Bertrand and Mary.
Happy to do so if you think we should do so, even though it's not the comments I heard, but fine. May I just suggest that we replace the subject on relationship between substantive rights and protective rights, because on this one, honestly, it's a pure judgmental or it's the pure appreciation of judgment relating to the overall rights and obligations of the partners within an operation. So I don't see what, and I think there are a lot already existing in the standards in this instance. And honestly, I have never encountered any difficulty in being able to apply judgment, having that judgment reviewed and audited by the auditors and enforced by the enforcer. On this specific appreciation, substantive rights versus protective rights. And I would have replaced this subject by the one we commented on with Bruce, coming from the agenda decision on IFRS 11, IFRS 16, because honestly, I don't believe it is an IFRS 16 issue any longer. Actually.
Then the question is really, do we want to exclude certain items that are on the list here? Because that was the comment that I made, that I heard more criticisms as to the list of issues, except for little 2i, which seemed to be agreeable that way, right? But all the others, some of you actually flagged a concern with that, either saying, well, it will always be a judgment area, or not sure how much we can actually add to this and things like that. And I'm fine with these, right? Mary, you wanted to come
in. I'm going to go back to something Bruce said about the is it IFRS 11, is it IFRS 16? About that issue, which is in the general theme is expectations management. And I'm going to comment about that in a couple of ways. One is, I think it's good to encourage us to cull the low chance items earlier rather than later, because the longer that we keep it on a list of possible things, et cetera, the more we create expectations that maybe something will happen. So I think if there are calls to be made, it would be better to be ruthless in an earlier stage rather than to defer decisions and to give more explicit reasons about why we think that if we believe that we have enough information to make that decision, that we're not going to consider it further. And then specifically, I want to flag something else that's implicit in this paper, but I want to give it a shout out. On page 13, the table that lists 15, no, that lists a number of issues, it's not all 15. When I was reading it, I was like, well, item one seems to be the issue that we are suggesting that we take on. And then item five seems to be related to the discussion in paragraph 24. And back and forth with Zen, that was very helpful, pointed out that, no, in each case, what the staff is suggesting, and I'm looking at the wording of question one on page 19, if you look at little two, it's just the change in relevant activities. It isn't all the issues around what if people hold different rights that kick in at different times. Now, you have to be a very careful reader to understand that what we're talking about is taking a small slice of what was suggested that we might consider. And that's, I bring in that up again in the context of expectations management, because people might say, okay, my issue is still alive, not realizing that we've already sliced it down to a very narrow population that may not answer kind of some very closely related questions. That's, I think, relevant for some of these, not all of them. I think, for example, the non-contractual agency relationships is a standalone issue, and that's all of the issue. But item one on the relationship between, sorry, item two, the change in relevant activities, is just one piece of the relevant activities. You know, this is the what if they change. Then there's the issue of what if I have rights over different, you know, different activities. That's not coming forward. So I guess when I look at question one, I think, should we be tougher now and take the hits now rather than, you know, raising expectations and getting harder pushback later on?
It's okay. It's a fair comment.
I thought Bruce was saying that he wanted the reasoning changed, yeah. Not that he wanted to include it in the scope of the project.
Yeah, I was going to make a comment. Yeah. I wouldn't include the scope. I just think the reasoning would give it.
I don't know, but it doesn't change.
No, fair enough.
Exactly. So, just listening to the discussion of calling now versus calling later, an important piece of that to me is going to be Anne's comment from yesterday, is if our expectation for PIR projects is they're kind of a plus when they go into the agenda consultation, so it's medium priority plus, that changes my calculus of whether to move it in if we're iffy on things. And I'm probably more likely to call them because I don't want to move things to the front of the line relatively or farther up in the line relative to what seems like, you know, I took the medium priority in the series of papers last month and this month to mean medium priority as we've translated it in the agenda consultation. But if it actually means medium priority plus to some people, then that's a little bit different calculus.
Sure.
I was going to make a comment a little bit along the lines of what Zach just said, because I think this is a bit of a strategic question for the board, and it sort of came up yesterday and it's coming up again today, which is, you know, what are people's expectations about a PIR and what are our own expectations about a PIR? Because I think that a lot of people probably, and I don't think it's a silly idea, think that following up stuff on PIRs is what they would consider sort of consistent application and maintenance stuff, and they want us to do quite a bit of that, if I remember rightly from the agenda consultation. And so, you know, I think it's, personally, I think it, what would help me, I think I heard people say definitely not A4. Well, a number of people who know that issue quite well, I think, were saying A4 sounds like something maybe not to go to. But I think on the other ones, for me, what would help me decide ultimately is, you know, how big a deal is it? So I would like to think, maybe I'm in dreamland, that you could do something fairly quick and simple to clarify what a substantive right versus a protective right is. And if it really helps people know what to do when they pick up IFRS 10, I don't think it's unreasonable for them to expect us to prioritise that when they wrote to us in a PIR. And so I think for me,
if some of these can be dealt with relatively neatly, and I'm a little bit dubious on non-contractual agency relationships, but if you seem to be saying you thought that something from the basis could be moved to the front to make a difference, if it's stuff like that that's not very big piece of work for us, and it's responsive and it's helping people with consistent application when they've, you know, we've responded to a PIR, I think as a board we sort of need to work out how we think about that and whether it is the same as other stuff. And I do have a little bit of sympathy for people who are finding it tough, and then we say, well, it shouldn't be so hard. We're going to work on this other big thing because, you know, lots of people want us to do the new thing. And I just, I'm not sure that we ourselves have a common view on how we approach that stuff.
And I think because of that point, Sue, that's why we put all of these kind of requests together, because if we'd have come to you with all 15 subtopics saying, well, you know, but we thought, well, actually, maybe the board could just take the ones where we feel we could do work that was restricted in scope and it would help people, then, and we put them together as a subtopic. But, I mean, I appreciate that everyone's going to have their own views on the individual subtopics. We certainly had enough discussions ourselves about which ones to put here, which ones not.
I wouldn't, so to summarise, I think it would be, I'd be interested to get a better understanding of how big some of these things are to make a subsequent assessment about what we do, rather than saying today no to some of these things.
I thought that's what we're doing though.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure, because I think these things should we just be tougher now.
But wouldn't we, so I'm just, but wouldn't, I mean, that's my sense. We're putting this then to the agenda consultation, and wouldn't we then at that point try and gauge how much work and
maybe I misunderstood what Mary meant, but I thought she was wondering whether we should be tougher now.
And I don't know that I was. Well,
I don't know.
I think Sue's question, taking my make the tough calls early, Sue's challenge to us is equally applicable if we're trying to do that before sending it to the agenda consultation. Let's not use the agenda consultation as the reason for deferring that assessment of what would we really take up. And I hadn't thought about the point that you raised about whether these really slot in as activities to undertake under the consistent application and maintenance area. But I do think we'd have to think about how we package them to get some efficiency, and also think hard about Rika's point about disrupting. You know, we go in and we fix it and we think this will be a big help, but if it makes everybody who's applying I4S 10 and I4S 11 reconsider their conclusions about every joint venture, that would be a pretty ugly cost. But I think we should do it in the context of the PIR to make some final recommendations to the agenda consult, rather than loading up the agenda consult as the bad guy.
I'm quite uncomfortable about just striking things out today. I think this is the second of two papers, and together they make a body of recommendations that have come out of the PIR. I think we do have to make strategic decisions, and so to Sue's point, and it was also mentioned yesterday, that I thought that we have to make strategic decisions about how the PIR works and where it fits into things. And you know, I just feel that we're on the fly going, oh, well, someone thinks this, someone thinks that, we cross that out. I remember what happened with IFRS 8. We crossed out so many things. We ended up with a couple of little things, and then we said, oh, we can't open up a standard for this. And that, I don't want us to end up in that same place having crossed out. So I hear what others are saying about the priorities and the importance of agenda consultation. But I think we have to put it all together and say, here's the parts that we're considering working on. I don't know at which point, given the priority ranking for agenda consultation, I don't know at which point we try and work out what the plan is, because in what I am hearing some people say is, if the staff could indicate, well, this could be a narrow scope amendment, and it could, you know, we could attend to. I think the staff have tried to do that, to say how big they think things are or how small they are. But I'd like to see it as a body of things, and I'd like to see the decision-making happening together so that we didn't just end up with these odd little things left after we, you know, done some process of elimination.
Same. Nick?
So I agree in substance. This is more about consistent application. That's really where, but that's kind of moving just categories around. Really, we still have voting capacity, however, wherever we want to put it. I agree today's probably not the day to decide, and we should come back and have a more rounded debate. I guess I feel a touch of caution when I hear about things can be done quickly, because in practice it rarely turns out that way, is what I seems to be my experience so far. I have to say, and there are lots of things people are finding tough out there. It's not just here, lots of places.
Jinzhou.
Thank you. Just a quick, very quick comment. I think I agree with Anne's comment, and also what Sue mentioned, because yesterday we discussed about agenda consultation. PII is part of the consistent application, topic. So I think this is one criteria we can look at it. For example, Bachan said that maybe we should not include the EC1, that is the relationship between substantive rights and protective rights. But clearly that, as the paper said, and as what I heard when we conducted the outreach activities, there really are misinterpretation of the requirements in the standards. So if we can do a little bit the same to clarify something, to enhance the consistent application, I think it will help a lot. So from my perspective, the staff has done a lot of research to try to filter those topics. I think at this moment, just including those four topics in the scope of the project, but when we decide this outcome of the third agenda consultation, if we decide to initiate that project, let's do to assess what kind of approach we are going to do. I think it's at this stage we decide to move a lot of topic out. I think it's a little bit too rough to decide at this stage. So from my perspective, I would like to support staff's recommendation. Just go ahead, and if we decide to do something in the next stage, let's think about it again and build on the additional information, something like that. Yeah.
Tom?
Just a small point. I just kind of back to the due process document for a second. And it seems to me the PR, we have to do one. And then it says you need to go out and learn stuff. And then it says, on the basis of that information, i.e. what we learned, the board decides what plans it plans to take, if any. And one of the things is, I think that would suggest that if we decide not to go ahead, we could do it for one of two reasons. The information we got suggested there was no problems, we're not going ahead, or in this case, because we have an agenda consultation, we have a whole pile of competing things and we just really don't have the time or the resources. But the second one isn't really consistent with the due process doc. It's a very pragmatic thing and it's a legitimate thing. But when we get there, if we decide not to go on these items, I think there should be at least a call that said, if we were not resource constrained, having done our due process PIR, this thing would have, should have been done. And I think we should rule on these items in that context. Now, we may decide to do nothing, but I think that fork needs to be, you need to be absolutely clear why you're not doing it. In this instance, having listened to everything, I suspect that these things will not, make it when they get compared with the agenda consultation competing items. But we should be clear that they were either a legitimate thing to have done or were fine. And then we could park it, and maybe the board picks it up at some point. So just as we do go through, I'd like that kind of delineated in the decision.
Okay.
I agree with what Tom mentioned. I'd probably say a little bit, my comment, previous comment sounded a little bit very negative to the staff's recommendation, but when I listening to the very proactive comment from Jinchao, I thought I asked the staff to introduce some more caution about identify the part type of the things we can pursue on these identified items. So I think I don't want to stop here, but I just want to see a little more balance between what we should do as part of the PIR and what we shouldn't do. So I hope our staff can bring back a little more analysis about what you heard from the board member today.
Mary?
I want to clarify that my call for making tough decisions earlier doesn't mean, it means earlier in the process, not necessarily today. Because I think I've heard enough of people identifying issues, you know, Sue's questions about maybe a bit more information on scale and thoughts about if we package them, how big it would it be? Because I also think we would not serve stakeholders well to dribble out, you know, one every 6 months kind of, you know, kind of thing of this. But I also take Anne's point, and I think, forget about what the specific issues are from this PIR of 10, 11, 12. We're still learning how to do PIRs. This is, I think, only our fourth, and we certainly have learned each time something new. But this is really because of the coincidence of timing with the agenda consult, forcing us to articulate what our policy is in respect of whether recommendations that come out of this are subject to kind of overall prioritization with the agenda consultation or not. And maybe we have to think about it in two buckets. One bucket is the bucket that's more, could be addressed by narrow scope amendments, but frankly, if you have 15 times narrow scope amendments, that starts to look awfully like a medium-sized standard-setting project, you know, which is Nick's point about it's the same resources. But still, you know, maybe we bucket them between these are discrete narrow scope items, and these are the ones that if we were to address would be more significant standard setting projects. And maybe we don't have a lot, if any, of those, because I could see us even saying the latter, the larger kind of standard setting projects should be considered more in an agenda consultation type of setting, while the others, if we give them at least a medium priority, are basically, as we have time and capacity, you know, to deal with them, depending upon what our overall conclusion is about how we prioritize items coming out of the agenda consultation. So I think that's maybe the learning point from this PIR, is getting a policy set, and I would say think about it stratified into those two buckets. Maybe we come to the same answer if they're both subject to agenda consultation or neither are subject to agenda consultation, but maybe we'll have a split decision.
Fair enough with the comments I thought. I would be happy to proceed with the list, as you or Anne or Chinchao mentioned, for instance, but many, many others. What could help me, and maybe it could help others too, I know, is to on those questions and on the others we discussed last time, maybe is to see also which types of stakeholders mainly asked for the question. And the reason I'm saying that is if there was a majority of preparers, it would mean that they have effectively a genuine practical application issue, i.e. they have a contract with legal rights and obligations, they have economic impacts deriving from the contract, and with the standards they find it difficult to link the two to reach a conclusion. So that would be what Sue flagged, a maintenance and application issue which we maybe need to deal with. It could help at least help me being a bit more convinced that we need to do something potentially.
Well, you said it's time to vote. I would have thought that what my resume out of the discussion is actually today is not the time to vote. But what I've heard is board members request more information on some of the issues. And so it really is not to postpone to the agenda consultation and bake it into that decision, but to do something before we actually decide, is this really something that should go into our consideration as part of our agenda setting, or should this be dealt with separately? And I think that seems to suggest to me that we probably need a new paper for that. That was my collection of what I've heard, but I may be wrong, Neely.
Maybe just a clarification question from the board members. The additional information that you're requesting, is that to help you identify the scope of the project or maybe narrow scope versus educational material? Or is that additional information going to help you determine, look, this is a non-starter issue, we don't need to do anything further? Because I absolutely agree with Tom's point that we should be clear at this point, just the technical grounds of, is there a standard setting or educational path forward, or is this just, there's no new information, we don't need to do anything further? That's an important distinction right now, because if we decide through this agenda consultation, look, we don't have the capacity, it's still a live issue in the feedback statement that could be then taken on in the next agenda consultation. So you want to keep it live if there's a technical grounds for it, but it shouldn't be killed now just because of capacity.
Michelle and Jim, I think we want to see something that is a paper that poses some questions to us about how we want to proceed. So I think, to picking up Tom's saying about how we're handling the due process, I think there's some steps to take that are saying, so that we are actually thinking about the PIR, and these are PIR decisions, and here we think these would be, you know, collaborative arrangements, big project, medium project, you know, or using the information you've got. So it's not suggesting more research, it's using what you've collected, but it's presenting a paper that looks at the strategy of how we're going to address this as a PIR. And that would be saying, well, here we've got things that we think that the response would have to be some sort of technical standard setting, whereas for this group of projects, we think that there's narrow scope amendments. Taking on board Nick's comment that nothing seems to be low-hanging fruit or happen quickly, but at least to look at all of the materials and you know, you've prioritised them. You've done so much work to put them into priorities so that we could assess them against the agenda consultation. But I'm asking that, would it be helpful if we had a paper and it talked about what our strategy was for this PIR, and then within that we've now got these topics, and, you know, are they things that are going to require major work or technical work, or is there things that look like they could be dealt with as maintenance and application, and then we make decisions about what we might take on. And then we look at priorities. But at least we came out to the end of the PIR where we said, this we think was worthwhile looking at. These are things we're going to take forward as narrow scope or amendments. But the whole thing had to be evaluated against resources. So that's recognising what Tom said about due process. How am I going, Michelle? Is that any help or not really?
See, at last month's meeting, the board made the decision on certain projects that it agreed, and it agreed the priority. And we didn't bring this paper because these topics, because we thought it was going to be a difficult discussion. What we did with the volume of feedback we had, which we put into a project called Assisting Application, which I think would be about the consistent application when we moved over to the agenda consultation. So to be clear, what the board are looking for now is the board looking at what we recommended for the assisting application project, the staff identifying what we would do, what we would propose within those projects and just that project, and not reopening the discussion that we had last month.
Well, when we had the last month's discussion on that paper, we've actually taken that and said we're going to look at that within the context of the agenda consultation.
Yeah.
That we actually made a decision.
Yeah.
But
then yesterday and today we've started saying, where does a PIR fit? And is it Zach who said it's PIR plus? Somehow we've got this
medium plus.
You know, is there something's got a plus on it? That's a conversation that's come up yesterday and tomorrow, because yesterday and today. Who knows what tomorrow will bring?
Are we just taking the paper that we said last month goes to PI? Does it just go to the agenda consultation and it gets assessed? It's nothing special. Or is there some way we look at a PIR
more
holistic?
Just have
way?
A neutral strategy paper, sort of not looking at these issues per se, but sort of saying PIR, agenda consultation, what's the relationship between these two things?
Because you could have PIR minus there. No, because if you've gone out and asked for specific...
All PIRs are going to line up with agenda consults Mary's point. Yeah. So I think we just need to know, like, even setting aside the feedback, how do we approach this? And then it's a separate matter then.
We have to think about October's discussion as well as today's discussion, because we didn't really have that strategy paper when we had October's discussion.
Okay, so that kind of seems to be, we want a strategy paper that sets out some strategic questions the board are going to... develop so that when it assesses the PIR it can decide how to take actions, and then once we've got that agreed with the board, then we would come back with, these are the projects we recommended, and now where should we categorise those projects within that strategy? So it sounds like we're talking about two steps.
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry if I'm being dim.
Quickly with a clarification.
An involving.
For me making that assessment, the other piece is where that fits into the resource planning that went into the agenda consultation. Mm-hmm. So it may require that team. So,
I was going to say, so the agenda consultation team will take care of the strategy paper. We'll work with you on that, and then that'll...
Okay. Because basically the question is the universe 2 to 3 large projects including these, or have we resource planned for this separately?
Well, we'll look at the whole thing together.
The answer probably is it depends, right? Because some of the projects that we have tentatively decided in the last meeting seem to suggest that this is more a new standard development project rather than maintenance and application, right? So it could fall into either, I suppose. What's wrong?
Nili asked a question right after my last comment, so probably I took it personally. So maybe I said I should probably clarify what I said. When I ask you, and I think this is for you as a PIR, IFRS 10, 11, 12 team, when I ask you to know from which types of stakeholders those various subjects come from, it's really to say either we take it or we don't take it. I mean, to take a very clear example, the relationship between substantive rights and protective rights, I'm honestly not convinced. Then I perfectly appreciate Sue's comments on maintenance and application issues. I cannot say something very different because I've been I was an interpretations committee member for 5 years, so it would be quite weird to say something different. If we received 10 comment letters, I don't know, it's just, and 8 of them were coming from preparers, then it would convince me that effectively we have potentially a maintenance and application issue. Then if 10 comes from non-preparers, I would dot that. And I would stick to my initial point saying, fine, there's no real application and maintenance issue, it's something else. And so we need to just get rid of the subject.
Okay, so
that's my what could help me.
Okay, so obviously we'll bring back the strategy paper. Then we'll bring back. Does the board want us to bring back the 4 topics that we proposed, or do we take one out? And we can tell you that the substantive and protective rights came through the firms.
Honestly, I'm not surprised. And I say it's not a maintenance and application issue, and I perfectly know why.
I'd actually say wait until we do the overall paper, and you know what framework you're trying to line things up against, and then can do a recap of whether you think you recommend any changes from what we decided in October, as well as the ones that are in here.
Okay.
I would think that makes more sense. Really.
I think it'll give us an easier framework to work with because we try to make the assessment within the scope of this project. Right. But I don't think we were wrong in saying, look, we can't make recommendations to the board at the simultaneously as the agenda project is going on just because of the timing.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was absolutely the right move. I didn't have a chance to catch you up, but this whole idea of a strategy paper was something that came out of the feedback discussion on the agenda consultation yesterday, so that's why there's probably this intersection here.
See, my proposition would be not to take a vote today on either question, so certainly not on the first one. The second one, probably, we have taken an implicit decision that we can't close this off as of today because there are further considerations that are needed. Right. Is that a fair summary?
Yeah.
Probably not very much to your liking, but...
No.
Yeah? Okay. I see nods. All right. Okay, then, with that, I will close this item and close today's meeting. Thank you.